This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
100 years and counting of U.S. colonial relations with Puerto Rico.
Today, it is still a colony that continues vehemently to ask for its basic democratic right of self-determination.
Jan Susler discusses the recent hearings of the status of Puerto Rico at the UN Decolonization Committee hearings on Puerto Rico. And Dilcia Pagan evaluates the status of the independence movement and events on the island now.
Dilcia Pagan is a former political prisoner who spent nearly 20 years in prison for her involvement in the Puerto Rican independence movement. And Jan Susler, attorney, distinguished for her work with the Puerto Rican independence movement, having represented Puerto Rican political prisoners for over two decades. Jan also served as lead counsel in the efforts culminating in the 1999 presidential commutation of the sentences of 16 political prisoners from Puerto Rico. And now, que viva Puerto Rico Libre. And I am honored to have both of these extraordinary sisters on. I should say that a moment ago, one of our producers, Howard Jordan, was here. And I said, well, why don't you help us with the program? He said, no, I'm just a mere soldier. You've got the generals.
Dilcia is the general. I am just her lawyer.
Oh, yeah. And Dilcia is. It's a mutual admiration society, no question about it.
Indeed.
Yeah, nice to open up by sending Jan Susler an incredible embrace because of her dedication to our struggle, to the release of the prisoners. You know, we were inside and she would visit. All the officers would say, you have the weirdest attorney. You all hug and kiss. And I said, but that's who they are. And Jan is exceptional. And Jan, I love you. Thank you for everything you've done for us. You continue to work diligently every moment of the day.
Well, there is a little irony as we look at the confirmation hearings of Elena Kagan, and then we have people like Jan Susler who are out there who I wish were the ones being interviewed for the position of Supreme Court Justice. But hey, we're going to be advocates. That's where it's at.
Well, when Puerto Rico's free, she definitely will be heading up the court.
That's the way it should be. But, I want to begin, just in case, I think there are many listeners who really don't know or necessarily understand the question of the status of Puerto Rico. I've referred to it, and obviously the two of you have acceded to it, that it is a colony of the U.S. Jan, I want to just start with you. Under the territorial clause of the United States Constitution and the Congress, that they have plenary powers over Puerto Rico. Is this what inherently determines that the status of Puerto Rico is that of a colony? And how would you characterize the relationship of Puerto Rico to the United States?
I think it's not a mistake. It's not an accident that most listeners don't know anything about Puerto Rico or the relationship between Puerto Rico and the United States. It's part of how most countries maintain their colonies, by maintaining people in the metropolis and the colony ignorant about the status. You go to high school, you open a history book. If you're lucky if you see the word Puerto Rico in the book, let alone an honest description of the relationship. The media is the same. In fact, in the recent hearings in the United Nations Decolonization Committee, you didn't see anything in the U.S. media about the fact that August world body is considering the colonial case of Puerto Rico. It's a long story, and it started in 1898 when the U.S. militarily invaded, imposed a government, and then in the 50s kind of waved a magic wand and said, we're going to change the name because we really want to avoid international scrutiny. We want to be able to do what we want to do with our colony. Forget about the fact that the rest of the world is decolonizing and creating a body of international law that says colonialism is a crime against humanity and that colonizing countries must get out of their colonies. The United States tried to avoid that kind of world scrutiny. Fortunately, they've not been able to, in part because of the tremendous resistance of the Puerto Rican people. People like Dilcia and her comrades and people and the generation of political prisoners before her, they actually went into Congress in 1954, her predecessors, and opened fire to try to expose to the world the lie that the U.S. was perpetrating by claiming that Puerto Rico was a self-governing country. So it's not. It is not a self-governing country. There's a presidential task force created by Bill Clinton that declared that if the United States wanted to give Puerto Rico away, it's just a mere possession. It could give Puerto Rico to another country. So it's very clearly a colony, and it's very clearly the responsibility of people in the United States to force its government to comply with international law and get out of Puerto Rico, let the Puerto Rican people determine their own destiny.
Jan, I'm interested in what the UN Commission was talking about and what kind of deliberations it had, what its conclusions were.
Well, every year, this was actually the 29th resolution that the Decolonization Committee passed, the 10th year by consensus. And every year, they reaffirm the inalienable right of the Puerto Rican people to determine their own destiny and apply the principles of international law of that colonialism is a crime to the case of Puerto Rico. And each year, it depends on what is happening. This year, like many of the previous years, one of the things that the committee does is names the three remaining political prisoners, Carlos Alberto Torres, Oscar Lopez Rivera, both of whom have served 29 and 30 years for their struggle for the independence of Puerto Rico, and says that the United States should release them. It calls on the U.S. to clean up the toxic waste that the U.S. Navy left in Vieques, that kind of thing.
We're going to go through those much more carefully, but before we jump to the end, let's go back to the beginning again and find out more about what the state, really, of the Puerto Rican independence movement is on the island. And Delcia, you gave up 20 years of your life. I shouldn't say gave up, but you've committed 20 years, leaving you behind the walls of the U.S. penitentiary system, but you've never given up anything. You've always been an exuberant part of the struggle. Well, what is the movement for independence status on the island at this time?
Well, the movement for Puerto Rican independence, we just celebrated 3 weeks ago our 30th anniversary of the Puerto Rico office of the United Nations. And I believe that since the assassination of Feliberto Day, we have had a resurgence of our movement. I think what's happened most recently is with the students. Our young people have shown us the new path for freedom. I think what the students of the university, the 10 campuses of the University of Puerto Rico were able to accomplish was an incredible defeat of colonialism. But I was just informed that our present colonial governor has turned around and been able to, he is now, the initial agreement that was made between the General Assembly of the students, the heads of the unions, and the heads of departments of all 10 universities, but there would be no retaliation to the students. The tuition would not go up, and that was agreed upon finally after 52 days. Universities were open. As of today, the governor of Puerto Rico has reenacted, gone to the Supreme Court of Puerto Rico. I was just told by on phone. And they're suing the students, the heads of the unions, the sindicatos, which are the heads of the departments, really, and the students for damages supposedly on the premises and all that occurred for 52 days for $5 million. That's the first default of colonialism. Number two, today he was able to get the legislature of Puerto Rico to assign 4 new members to the board of directors of the University of Puerto Rico. Why? Because then that gives his government supreme control of anything that occurs within all the universities of the UPR throughout the island. The culmination of this is that as of January, the tuition will be going up from $8 to $1,000 so that everything that our students struggled for that supposedly in good faith was signed that wasn't going to occur, our present colonial governor has now rescinded everything and it lets everyone know that colonialism is alive and well in Puerto Rico. I'm in New York City right now, and I will return tomorrow afternoon. So I do not doubt that there's going to be a lot of repression going on continuously on the island. And I think people have to understand with this new governor, his idea of dealing with Puerto Rico is to totally privatize all aspects of the Puerto Rican life. They're in the process right now of negotiating that the Puerto Rican Electrical Company be privatized. Puerto Rico Telephone was taken over by Claro, which is a Mexican-owned company. It's Mexidel. So the phone company is not ours. So now they want to sell the electrical company And it goes on and on. And I think people should be aware of, people think, you know, you go to Puerto Rico, and in comparison to Latin America, we look like we're in this wonderful paradise. This Puerto Rico still is a paradise invaded. I live in Louisa. Mr. Trump was just in Puerto Rico 2 days after the governor was elected. He has now made a multi-billion-dollar operation in Rio Grande. In the middle of this economic crisis, the governor has now been able to fire 37,000 public employees and continues on and on. So need I say more? I think people need to be aware of what Puerto Rico, the Puerto Rican livelihood is really about. It's about repression, it's about unemployment, and it's about this governor and his little puppets attempting to take away everything that belongs to the Puerto Rican nation.
Why did you call the strike that the students led for approximately, I believe it was 5 weeks, around the issue of mostly, I guess it was, well, not entirely, but tuition? Why did you call that a kind of anti-colonialist strike? What were the political demands and significance that you would frame it that way?
Well, I think because if you heard the voices, and, you know, all of the students that participated and the negotiators were not all independentistas, but they were students that had a vision of what they wanted for the future of Puerto Rico. One of the young leaders was a statehood member of the PNP, and he said very clearly, I know what I belong to and my parents belong to, but I believe that as students, we have the right to be able to control the livelihood of the students. The universities belong to us, and they should be run with a conjunction of a collective of student control, administrators, but to be able to develop a livelihood for the Puerto Rican young people and the future of Puerto Rico. And what I said was, it shows you that our young people have a vision for Puerto Rico. They do want change. And sometimes it doesn't matter. I've always said that every Puerto Rican, you scratch them and they all want independence. I have dear friends that are statehooders, and I always tell them that I am their illumination. Because deep down inside, everybody, there's not a Puerto Rican that doesn't want to be a Puerto Rican and want to be able to control our country. As for us, for ourselves, not under United States rule. I think the problem is that the colonializers, which is those that control the government and all aspects of our livelihood, of course, pay the role of the oppressor, which is the United States government.
Not everybody knows who Filiberto was. If you can just give us a brief synopsis and then tell us about why or how that also determines the prognosis that you just gave, that there is going to be a tremendous state of repression against the student activists, against young people, by the colonial government of Puerto Rico.
Okay, surely. Filiberto Gendarrios was the head of the Macheteros, which is the armed organization. I mean, still exists in Puerto Rico. Of Puerto Rico, Filiberto had been 23 years. He had been 15 years in clandestinity, and on September 23rd, 5 years ago, while his speech was being, because he always, even though he was in clandestinity, I gather the audience knows what clandestinity is, he always was able, every national holiday, he always sent a message. As we were listening to his voice and his message, yearly message in 15 years, the FBI sequestered where he lived with his wife, Beatrice, and their dog, and they assassinated him. They shot him. There were 200 and some odd bullets into his home in Hormigueros. His wife was brought outside, Beatriz. She was put on her knees, and she was pulled outside, and she witnessed Filiberto Gendarrios being assassinated by the FBI to such an extent that they stopped all communications and all airfares and all electricity in the town of Hormigueros so that they could do their operation. Filiberto Gendarrios was 73 years old, but they used a military operandi, and they used a weapon which went into his right shoulder, penetrated his chest, and came out through the back. So Filiberto Gendarrios bled for 36 hours, and the government allowed him to bleed to death and assassinated Filiberto Gendarrios. After his assassination, I'll be honest, I have never seen, and there was an outpour of support at his funeral. There were thousands upon thousands of people at his body was moved from San Juan to Hormigueros, thousands upon thousands of men, women, children. The police saluted him. Government workers, children sat in their yards in school with their fists up, and they had signs that said, FBI assassin. So that Feliberto Gelas Rios assassination, contrary to what the FBI thought they were going to win, created a new resurgence of consciousness, not just among Puerto Rican young people, but among the entire Puerto Rican nation.
Moving back to Jan, I just want to, again, Ken had ended with the question of some of the recommendations that were made about the status of Puerto Rico to the UN Decolonization Committee. I want to ask you about the United States Congress was recently, both houses were considering legislation proposed by Puerto Rico's non-voting resident commissioner, which allegedly addressed the colonial status of Puerto Rico. Does this event approach compliance in any way by the U.S. to assume its responsibility to expedite a process that will allow the Puerto Rican people to exercise their inalienable right to self-determination, or is it a total fraud?
Obviously, the United Nations thought that it had nothing to do with international law because this year's resolution, just like the past 28 resolutions, called for the United States to do exactly what you said, Mimi, to assume its responsibility to expedite a process that would allow Puerto Rican people to exercise their rights to self-determination in compliance with international law that declares colonialism as a crime. Now, it's also interesting because like the newspaper in Puerto Rico, there are several daily newspapers. The main one is not a pro-independence newspaper by any stretch of the imagination. But after the U.S. Congress passed the law, which was totally recognized by almost everyone as a pro-statehood measure, the editorial in the local daily newspaper called it a sham and fraud. And called it ridiculous. It calls for various plebiscites for the Puerto Rican people to vote, none of which are binding on the United States. So it's sort of like an exercise in futility. But the characterization by the actual newspaper and the editorial was one that was very telling, because obviously people in Puerto Rico didn't even recognize it as a legitimate attempt to come into compliance with international law.
Well, should elections be held by the U.S., or should it be held by the U.N., or what is the proper way of going about this?
I think elections is sort of the way that the United States often pretends that a democracy exists, not just in Puerto Rico, but throughout the world, and in the U.S. as well. And elections are certainly in Puerto Rico not the measure for determining what should happen with respect to the relationship between the U.S. and Puerto Rico. How can you have elections in a country where you have a foreign court imposed, where you don't even have your own monetary? The money in Puerto Rico is U.S. dollars. You can't control your own borders. If you're having a cultural event and you want to invite musicians from other countries, you don't get to decide whether they come in to your own country. So, you know, Dilsey, go ahead. You going to say something?
No, I'm saying I agree with you, Jan. You know, I think people have to understand the U.S. controls 80% of our economy. The Puerto Rican nation does not determine what happens in our everyday, in all of our socialization process of life, which includes education, health, employment. All the aspects of everyday life is controlled by the United States government.
Including an there's actually both, it's sort of a coalition between the current colonial administration that favors statehood and the United States. They're, once again, it's not the first time in the history of Puerto Rico, doing a real assault on the Puerto Rican culture and language. They are defunding all Puerto Rican cultural institutions. They're reimposing English as a language, putting in street signs in English. The police are no longer La Policía de San Juan. They're San Juan City Police Department. I mean, it may seem minimal, but a culture and a language are very much the identity of a people. And the U.S. knew that when it first invaded Puerto Rico, it imposed English as a language. It didn't work because people resisted. but they're at it again. And it really, given the assault on Puerto Rico in every way, from having Walmart and Payless shoes and Blockbuster, the assault on culturally, the criminalizing of the independence movement, really, and I'm not joking about that, making the advocacy of independence a crime, making it a crime to fly the Puerto Rican flag alone without the U.S. flag at its side. It really is quite a miracle that there even is still a Puerto Rican independence movement. It's a very resilient people who are very strong and very proud of their culture, and they're not going to be suppressed. And that's even why there's still UN attention on the case of Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rican people understand. You don't go to the United States Congress and say, oh, please, 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 won't you leave? We really would like to control our own destiny. You of all people should know that, since you started off as a colony and waged a war to get your own independence. So please, won't you leave? It doesn't work that way. No country in the world has ever been decolonized as a result of the colonizers saying, oh, gee, you're right. This really is a travesty. Of course all people want to be free. We're sorry. Here are the reparations to pay you for all the years that we've ripped off your natural resource and polluted your waters and tested our birth control pills on your women. And it doesn't work that way. So you go to the world and you say, this is what's right. This is what we have a right to. And there are international solutions which the United States is going to have to comply with.
What are the demands for the 100 years plus of colonial status for the 3.8 million U.S. citizens of Puerto Rico? What do we do to, and what was said towards the movement to self-determination?
Well, self-determination is the release of all our political prisoners. We have Carlos Alberto being sent home in July. Hopefully Oscar and Avelino Gonzalez will be home soon.
And they've been in for at least 29 years, right?
Exactly. 20. Carlos III has done 30. Oscar has done 29. Avelino has been, and he was just sentenced to 7 years, and he's been inside 3 years. So that we continue to struggle, but we will have our self-sovereignty. Puerto Rico will one day be a free nation and self-sovereign.
It's going to be a transition. Not going to be the United States saying, okay, the UN says we have to leave, goodbye. There's obviously going to be a transition period where Puerto Rican people are going to develop their own, just like with Vieques. When the U.S. Navy left Vieques, there were sustainable economic plans developed by very, very talented and resourceful Puerto Rican people. The resources and the talent are very much there in Puerto Rico to develop a sustainable economy, to come to the table of nations as an equal. And there's going to have to be a transition period. The U.S. is going to have to withdraw all of its repressive agencies, its courts, its FBI, its police, and then the Puerto Rican people are going to figure it out. And that's what has to happen. There are lots of models. Africa, obviously, was colonized for years by different European countries. Some people have figured it out better than others. But we've got a lot of potential in the Puerto Rican people, who are creative and resourceful people.
And I assume
Absolutely. We
have to hold criminally liable all those responsible for the assassination of Filiberto Ojeda Rios in 2005, among
and,
others.
Know, Filiberto, right, he's not the only one.
We have a trajectory.
There's also a process of the United States having to disclose all of the actions that it's taken to criminalize and undermine the independence movement. The FBI has to this date refused to disclose its records for the last many, many decades. And even though there are some of the older records are being disclosed, the more current records are not. Obviously, there's a lot of work that has to be done to allow the Puerto Rican people to realize their own self-determination.
And Delcia, we have 1 minute left. We want to give you the final word. Is that about the striking students not being harmed or penalized for their courageous struggle? You tell us what it is.
I think what it is that we have to support these students and people. We need to have you guys do more news bleeds outside to what's happening really in Puerto Rico. I'm available. You can call me whenever you need to find out what's really happening.
Oh, are you going to regret that? We're going to call you constantly.
And let me just offer, there's a website people can go to, BoricuaHumanRights.org. That's Boricua, B-O-R-I-C-U-A, BoricuaHumanRights.org. That's an organization that does solidarity work with Puerto Rico, Vieques, the repression, and the political prisoners, where you can get updates too. And the National Lawyers Guild International Committee is also got a website where there's often educational material available for people.
And we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to come back again and again because we must, until there really is the exercise of the self-determination of our sisters and brothers from Puerto Rico. And it has been an absolute honor to speak with Delcia Pagan, one of our real sheroes, and Jan Suslo. Hey, you're the kind of attorney I really want to be. It has been totally an honor to have both of you on. Que viva Puerto Rico Libre, sisters.
Thank you, Mr. Que viva.
Great. Thank you, Mimi. Thank you all. Viva Puerto Rico Libre.
El ladrón que cruza los mares a vivir. Como creció un honor en medio del cañaveral, pedí ahí que perdón por cantar. Monón, eres libre como el viento, si me canso me siento.
The incomparable Roy Brown. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.